Hello and welcome to the Matt's Movie Reviews Podcast. I am your host, Matthew Perkovic, and this is episode number 593. Releasing March 21 on digital in Australia, the UK and Ireland is Brightwood, a sci-fi horror in which a contentious couple find themselves trapped in a time loop as they jog around a parkland pond. Making matters worse is the presence of a silent, hooded figure who stalks their every move. A horror film about relationships that takes the vow of till death do us part to a new level, Brightwood also marks the feature film directorial debut of Dane Ilkar. I'm glad to say he joins me now on the podcast. Dane, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me on. It's great. Thank you.
So I went back and I watched your short film, The Pond, which you did back in 2021. Found it on your YouTube. Had a good watch of it.
We actually... That was 2018, actually, so a few years ago.
And I was watching that, and because I knew that, you know, The Pond was kind of like the germ of the idea that you wanted to work on, that pretty much became Brightwood. And you star in it yourself. It goes around 16, 17 minutes, black and white. Yeah. Really great short as well, and I could definitely see the elements of The Pond and how it kind of went to Brightwood. My question is, though, is that when did the decision come to kind of delve into the feature film world? And I know you've done lots of shorts before. What was it about The Pond that made that the pick that you wanted to kind of like delve into more to kind of and create into this feature film that everyone will be watching very soon?
Yes. So it started with this kind of initial idea of almost like a Twilight Zone, where a guy goes to this pond and he's walking around and he gets stuck and he can't get out no matter where he goes. And that was the initial kind of seed of the idea. And as I was making that short film, and it was we were in the woods and it was hot, but it was just me and one other person, no money, you know, low budget short film. I just had the thought came to my head that how interesting would it be to put a couple in this scenario where they suddenly are stuck with each other, and especially a couple that's kind of on, you know, teetering on the edge of divorce or separation and not liking each other, and then throwing them into the scenario. Yeah, that was kind of, it just kind of stuck with me. And years went by. And I think I worked on a number of other short films and I edited, and I'd always, the desire to make a feature film was always so strong. You know, that was the goal, get the first feature film done. And I had been working on a project with my producing partner, Max Wortendyke, who's the lead in Brightwood, on another project. And it seemed like we were about to get that made. And then the pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it all kind of went, you know, it didn't work out, didn't pan out. And so that idea kind of just started coming back to me, and I kept bringing it up to Max, and he was like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, and because you kind of sound a little crazy when you talk about it. Well, it's just people going around in circles. And anyway, so I made the decision that I was going to write it, and I wrote the draft, the first draft. I wrote it pretty quickly, and then I shared it with Max, and it just seemed like the project that we could actually do, that we could use kind of the limitations as kind of like artistic obstructions, that we were going to, like, you know, we were only going to have one location, so let's use it. We were only going to be able to have two actors, so let's use it to our benefit and see what we can do in it. It just kind of started to evolve into the exact right project to make, and the project that we could make during that time period.
And it's kind of fitting as well, considering COVID and the restrictions and the limitations, to have a movie about this couple who seem to be stuck in the one place, dealing with all the claustrophobia and they're like getting on each other's nerves, which I'm sure a lot of people around, especially. I'm a married man myself. I've got two kids. I know exactly what the whole COVID situation was like.
Yeah.
It just only fit in a kind of like a production standpoint, but thematic as well, didn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, and that was on my mind. I think I never, I had been thinking about it for so long that I'd never thought of it as kind of like a pandemic movie, but the themes of it were so strong, and it was such a perfect thing to make during that time. And it just was very relevant. And what's great is that even though the pandemic is now over, people are still responding to it quite a bit. So it's been fascinating to see that as well.
When it came to your two cast members in your film, so you spoke about Max. He plays the role of Dan, a husband. Then you have Dana Berger. She plays Jen. It's really interesting just doing some research on this, that in a sort of way you guys did a lot of kind of rehearsal. Almost seemed like almost kind of like like a how approach like a theatrical play would be approached, wouldn't it? You guys worked a lot of
Very much
dialogue. You
so.
did stuff. When it comes to them taking your script and working on it, what happens to the dialogue at that point? Once they start working on it, and you want the dialogue to be as naturalistic as possible, because this is, we're dealing like with really raw emotions here, and this couple need to be, you need to believe this couple, know each other really well, can get under each other's skin. When you're there and you're watching them go through stuff, what type of redrafts do you have to go through with the dialogue? Is there a lot of stuff taken from their rehearsals that you thought, hey, that works pretty well, I might change this here or change that there?
Yeah, it's a very organic process. I love working that way, and I love working with actors. Max and Dana are both incredibly smart, intelligent people, and funny. I wanted to have some humor in there. So when I gave them, I think probably like it was the second or third draft where I felt like I had the story, pretty late, solidly laid out. And then, kind of like what you said, I knew that filming it, especially in the woods, it wasn't gonna be a comfortable situation for them. And so I kind of brought them in early. I wanted them to be really aware of their characters and knowing and comfortable in what they were saying and the dialogue. So I brought them in and we would just rehearse. They would read through the scripts. Sometimes we'd talk about it, sometimes we wouldn't, but I would go back and then I would just start rewriting it. And what that ended up doing is it really kind of distilled down the dialogue and their story and what was really needed to progress the film forward in a very active way. It was one of the things that I kind of knew as well, that from making the short, that in order to keep it kind of interesting, I wanted to keep it going. So it's, they're constantly kind of moving, and I loved working that way, and it really did help hone the script that was kind of already there. The base was there, and I kind of made sure that, that stayed intact. So we weren't changing like major things, but in terms of the dialogue and what was important, those conversations were great and really helped.
This might be a silly question, but considering it's a time loop movie, how much consideration is put into costume, what the clothes are going to wear? Because you're going to have them in these clothes, and there's going to be moments. I don't want to give away spoilers and stuff. The clothes could be
Sure.
much more dirty in one scene. There could be rips in another scene. Are you guys like buying multiples of the same stuff? Are they bringing stuff from their own wardrobe?
Oh,
How is that
I mean,
all going to work out?
I think there was like a there was like a deal on blue sweatshirts. I bought many, many blue sweatshirts, but yeah, no, all of that was a lot of that kind of costume stuff was me. I did a lot of it, and it was just thinking about that progression, that the longer that they're there, how that would change kind of the how it would they would potentially get dirtier. And then also the actors as well, it's they took on that responsibility to kind of see where their characters were at and how that changed, how they might fit in their costumes. So it was kind of a working together and a collaboration in that regards. But yeah, that was all laid out in the plan. So Max and I sat, and we scheduled this film, and we did the shot list. I mean, to a T, we just needed to get everything really tight in the planning stages. So all of those costume changes, what characters were what, and have a timeline of when they are that in the script, because we were shooting out of order as well. So we really needed to know like who was whom at that moment in the script. So yeah, that was just due to the planning and kind of really thinking about it, and that allowed us to kind of have a great freedom when we were filming it, so that they could really play and know where they were in time and in the script.
So the lake in the movie is different to the one in the short, is that correct? And it's at Bird Lake in New Jersey. That's where you shot the
Egbert
one in the
Lake.
film.
Yep.
And when you're it's so you had a 16-day 16-day production. 12 of those days you're with Max and with Dana, shooting outdoors. Now, When it comes to that aspect of shooting outdoors, even though it's COVID and even though I'm sure there's restrictions, lockdowns, etc., one caveat that a lot of territories had, like even here in Sydney, is that they urge people to go outside and go to the park and walk around and stuff. Do you have to
Yeah.
deal with high levels of traffic that usually might not have been there around that time? And if so, how do you go about kind of like you got such a tight budget, you've got a certain amount of number of days. I'm sure you need to get your shots in during the day. And the last thing you need is like during the shot, it's like some guy just walking past and he's like, his exercise gear, right? So how do you go about kind of like making sure that you can get the shots that you need without that sort of interference that a running track would usually give to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult. We basically the first time that I saw Egbert Lake in Rockaway, New Jersey, it was covered in snow and someone was ice fishing on it. And but it met the criteria that I was looking for, which I really wanted there to be a trail all around it. It wasn't too big. The original pond that I filmed the short was in a neighborhood in New Jersey where they were just going to want way too much money. And Rockaway, New Jersey just said, hey, sure, go film there. And we got the permission through the town and it was great. So as I was kind of watching, the snow melt and I was hoping that it would work out. I was hoping that this thing would kind of, because we were planning to shoot, I think, in May. So it was right when the leaves are starting to grow, and so it was a panic attack for a while, just to hope that there actually were leaves on the trees. However, you're absolutely right. People during that time, people would love to go out. So when I'm seeing this pond and I'm saying this is a perfect location, nobody's out here. Well, when the weather started to get nice, that's when you did get fishermen out, fishing all over the place, or we had a lot of kids on ATVs, riding the motorcycles, and then of course they would all stop because they'd want to know like what's going on, and their engines are going, and at first, I mean, I admit, a couple of times I probably did want to kill a kid, but it ended up being really cool. You'd go and just kind of talk to them like, hey, we're filming this thing. If there was a fisherman, it was, they would be kind of they would understand that we were doing this, and we had signs all over saying, please, we're here filming. So it ended up working out. However, there was always, we lucked out with weather, but there was, we had no idea, but suddenly for some reason there was like, I think there was an airport nearby, so you would hear planes. And then the worst thing of for us was just the bugs. Just tons of ticks, New Jersey forest, lots of ticks.
The Matt's Movie Reviews podcast is brought to you by Fandango. Get the latest showtimes, guaranteed tickets, browse Rotten Tomatoes scores, and watch trailers with Fandango, the number one movie ticketing app. The Matt's Movie Reviews podcast is brought to you by TeePublic. TeePublic is the world's largest marketplace for independent creators to sell their work on the highest quality merchandise. With over 1.2 million designs, TeePublic is sure to have something you love. The Matt's Movie Reviews podcast is brought to you by Gift Card Store. Australia's leading provider of gift cards, Gift Card Store offers a variety of prepaid MasterCard and Visa cards in physical or e-card format. You can even design your own card as the ultimate personalized gift. With Gift Card Store, you can gift the gift you know they will love. Please support Matt's Movie Reviews on Patreon. Get access to exclusive content, request movie reviews and top 10 lists, and help support my work. Please click on the Patreon link in the description below. When it comes to filming in New Jersey, so myself as an outsider, and I've spoken this before to another filmmaker from New Jersey, I just want to know, he was explaining to me that Jersey is just such a adaptable place because there's so many parts of it. Like you have like a rural part, you have like a rural kind of urban part to it as well. There's so many different places you can go to and film different scenes and do different types of films there. Yourself as a filmmaker from Jersey, what's it like filming in the New Jersey, what's it like regards to the filmmaker community? I know a lot of films do get made there, but when it comes to independent filmmakers like yourself, how hospitable is it? Can you get your locations if you need them? Do you get like is a how's a car is a crew around there? What's it like filming in Jersey overall?
I mean, I we, I th I mean, I think it's great, and it's absolutely right. It's very, it's one of these things where you're near this major, you're near actually two major metropolitan cities. You're near New York City and then Philadelphia, and you not only have these kind of small towns and hamlets, you kind of get the sense that you're in the country, and then you go over the hill, and then there's like New York City. So you have this varied change in scenery and foliage. But yeah, I found filming in New Jersey to be great. We worked through the New Jersey Film Commission. They gave us permission to do anything we wanted out there, and we worked with the local authorities, and I think the people were generally really excited. I'm actually originally from California, and I from the LA, and it's much harder to film there. Everybody knows what a movie is, and money, and so here people were very nice and accommodating to filming.
I've also found that talking to a lot of filmmakers over the last few years or so, with that example you talked about in regards to LA and Hollywood and such, there seemed to be quite a bit of an exodus coming out from that city, going to the smaller places, not only like New Jersey, but also places like, say, Maine or
Yeah, that's true.
Florida, Atlanta, for example. So have you found it has been a bit of a migration of a lot of kind of like talent and cast and crew coming from these places like New York and Los Angeles, where filming there comes with a certain amount of restrictions and financial it can be financially expensive when moving in finding like other towns around areas like a New Jersey, for example, and like setting up shop there, and because of that, the local filmmaking community and also TV productions and all sorts of other stuff as well is just kind of like all tides lifted with that exodus.
Yeah, I think it's true. I think it's spread out, and I think some of that had to do with the pandemic. I think that people started to realize that they didn't necessarily have to be in LA so that they could do things remotely. I also think that I know tax incentives. I mean, we were such a small film, so that didn't really have anything to do with us. But for example, for the next film, that's a big deal if you can get 30%, tax credit on your film wherever you're filming in a certain location. And then, yeah, in terms of the technology of how it's so much easier to film and to find people that have to cameras and lights and all of that, it's much more spread out. It's no longer just a kind of an LA industry. And they're, I mean, even down in Georgia, that's where they film all the Marvel movies, and they film, all the big stuff down there. And so, yeah, I think that's true. I mean, it's all just, it's kind of being able to find the people that you're willing to collaborate with, and there's so many people out there, and just kind of finding those folks. They're out there, and they're close by.
The other thing about New Jersey as well is I think a lot of people when they hear like New Jersey, they think maybe crime film, gangster film, of course, because of Sopranos and
Oh,
all sorts of stuff like
yeah.
that. But New Jersey has a really kind of rich history in regards to horror filmmaking as well, which Brightburn is now a part of now. Toxic Avenger was filmed there, and a lot of scenes and external stuff for the Amityville Horror was filmed there. Then of course you got Friday the 13th, which
So
with
I have a story about that. I was
yeah, go ahead.
my wife and I and my wife I was she was pregnant, and we were driving around New Jersey, and we hadn't been in New Jersey for that long. I kind of have a strange history with New Jersey, is that I lived here for a while. We met here, and then we were in LA for a while, and we kind of moved back. But we were driving around, and we were because she got some job interview, I forget, and as I'm going through this town, I'm like, oh, I bet there's like some cult here. It's perfectly nice town, but I'm like, this looks like they're gonna like, have some strange churches and cults and blah blah blah. And so I started in my head, just because it dawned on me, I just went tss, tss, tss.
Yeah,
Every time we
right.
go around a corner, tss, 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 tss. That is Blairstown. That's where they shot Friday the 13th, and I had no idea. It just like it just had this sense about it. It was pretty funny once we found out.
But in a movie, it's called Camp Crystal Lake, but in real life, it's Camp Nobby Busco, I think it's called. Is that the what the name
Yeah,
of it
something
is?
like that. Yeah.
It's really, I think it's really cool as well, because now, Brightwood has is it's part of that kind of lineage of kind of lakeside horror
Yeah,
New Jersey films as well, which is pretty cool, I
that's
think.
true. Find a lake. That's number one key.
So I know this movie has been on the festival circuit for a long time. It released in the States last year. When you have people watch this film, and this is a movie that, even though it's a genre film, sci-fi horror, at its core, it's an intimate film about, as we said before, about relationships. In this case, a marriage that's kind of fallen apart. What type of reactions do you get from your audience? Do you get different people coming up to you and talking about the themes in the movie?
Yeah, I mean, the festival run was really fascinating because we'd have such a kind of varied response to it. And, I remember being in, we premiered in the US in Austin at Other Worlds Film Festival. And it was great. It was such an amazing experience. And people were laughing and they were just really into the movie and it was very intense. But I do remember this guy came up to me. After he was very kind, but he just said, your movie really disturbed me. Like I don't feel good. I don't know if I liked it. It just was disturbing. And I said that's perfectly okay. That's an okay feeling to have. And then we went to San Francisco, and some lady yelled out that it was a new favorite romantic comedy. And so what I've kind of learned is that the film kind of acts because it's got a this kind of metaphor in it. It is a that it kind of depends on where you're at in your relationship and what you think about relationships. It really feeds into how you feel about the film and what you'll take away. So it's been fascinating.
When it comes to the time loop aspect of the movie, is there ever you ever think about whether there was a day that you would like to have a time loop on? I'm not going to say how many loops you get, but was there ever a day do you think to yourself, if I could get that day and have a few cracks at it, which day would that be?
Oh geez. You know what? I'm a very simple person. I just got my 7-year-old to really full. She'd been struggling with riding her bike, and finally we had that moment where it was like she went off. And it's
Awesome.
just those moments, where you're like, yeah, that's so great. And then of course, like two hours later, she falls and is bloody and scraped up. But it was amazing. It's just
Yeah.
that little moment, that nice little moment. Yeah, in terms of a full day, yeah, I'll just stick with that. I think I like that.
I got an 8-year-old, so we're doing the same thing. We use with bike
Yeah.
riding as well. So, and he's finally just cracked through as well with his riding. So that's a yeah, I definitely relate to that. And if I could choose a day, my day would be when my youngest, when he was 3, fell over and somehow managed to cut his head right here. He's got a big
Yeah.
scar around there now. If I could do that today again, I would, because there's something like when kids fall, it happens like that, right? So if you could
Oh yeah.
premeditate it, that would be awesome, because that day was a bit of
Oh, those
a
are intense. Yeah, my daughter did that, just fell, cut her chin open. It was horrible.
But scars make stories, and what say, chicks love scars, so
But yeah. But that's it, that's what's amazing about, I mean, that's what I kind of the interesting thing, I've kind of said this before, but the interesting thing about time and time loops, it is like this physical impossibility to be stuck in time. Time's ever moving forward. Except we all kind of seem to have this understanding, or we kind of think we know what it would feel like to be in a time loop, because we too are also trapped in this time that we're existing in. And so I just felt like that, that really is this true feeling that we have. And so putting this couple into it has really resonated with folks in that regard. And it allowed us to really explore, that aspect of a relationship when you do feel like you're stuck, when you are going around in circles and life feels that way, or going in and out of toxicity and love and hate. So that kind of plot device really kind of lent itself to that, because I do think it's a real feeling that we have. Like, we do feel stuck sometimes, even though we're not in a loop.
If just a bit of a hypothetical here, if Jen and Dan find that exit after all they've gone through and all the things that happen in the movie, what do you think is the first thing they do when they return home? Do you think the first thing they do is take a shower? Do you think the first thing they do is get a proper meal? Do you think the first thing they do, which I think might happen, is they just go in their separate ways straight away and don't see each other again because they've been with each other for, multiple lifetimes, it seems, by the end of that film.
I mean, I think that's right. I think in my head it was always kind of like the way the movie progresses is that they come to realize that they kind of do, there's a moment in the film where they do kind of l understand that they love each other, but it's not necessarily a love that's they're meant to be together. You know, they also have this understanding that now they're not going to be together. But that's not how the way, of course, the film necessarily ends. But yeah, I kind of think of it as a kind of, that they would, yeah, that they would probably separate. I think it would be funny. Now, the funny ending, yeah, would be that they finally do go out and get some dinner at just like a barbecue place or something. Start over.
So for everyone out there listening, March 21 on digital in Australia, the UK and Ireland, Brightwood, I really highly recommend people check this film out because I'm a big fan of time loop movies. But I love to see a time loop movie that kind of messes around with the conventions of that subgenre. And I think you've done such a great job here, Dane, with that with Brightwood. It's a great film. I do recommend everyone to check it out. And also, yeah, I can't wait to see what you do next. Next time you get something up the ground, you and Max work on something, give me a year. I'd love to talk to you again in the future.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been great.